On today's episode, I talk about some of the things to think about before you make your first hire. I hope you enjoy it. What's up, everybody? Hope your week is going well. On today's episode, I want to get into the transition of going from being a one-man show to hiring your first employee and kind of walking through that transition of when you do that. And I do have an episode about when to hire your first employee. But I really wanted to get into the nitty-gritty details of transitioning from one-person operation to adding that first person or second person or wherever you're at in your business. You know, some of you get these big contracts, you start getting subbed out by some of these larger companies, and all of a sudden you have way more work than you had before. And you realize there's no way you can continue to do this on your own. You got to go out and hire somebody. So I've learned a lot about hiring, and I've scaled multiple businesses many times from one person to as many as 15 people in a branch. And so I've learned a lot about transitioning there from the person who's doing it all to the person who's doing nothing. And I have a funny story to tell about that. But before we get into that, you know, what does that look like? So I think the most important thing that I see, and I do talk to a lot of operators out there, and I always enjoy the conversation, but the common thing that I see is people are going out and they're hiring, and there's nothing on paper that has determined what exactly the expectations are of this employee. There's no structure in place to hold this employee accountable. And then the person that hires the employee, they just end up super pissed off because the employee is just not following, is not doing what they would normally do. So, you know, it's really difficult because, you know, for us, when you start that business, you obviously know exactly what you need to be doing, right? Not really, but eventually you do. And you have a lot of confidence of what needs to be done. And you just kind of expect everybody else to know what you're saying and that they're going to remember everything that you're saying. And I don't think everybody's going to remember what's on a piece of paper, but they cannot deny it is the point. You can't deny what they signed. So if I put on a piece of paper duties and responsibilities, and that new hire signs that piece of paper and I email it to them so they have a copy of it, well, now there's really no excuse. They know what they're supposed to be doing. They know what their weekly goal is. And, you know, now it's up to them to achieve it. And then there's other things that you can do to create structure. So a lot of you have businesses where you don't have an office, and neither do we, nor do we plan on it. So if you're running a business without an office, I think that there really needs to be structure as you're transitioning from a one-person company to a two-person company. So how do you create structure? I think you can create structure by having some sort of consistency within the business. So the time that you start every day needs to be consistent. The time that you end, maybe there can be a little bit of flexibility there, but there needs to be a time that, you know, in general, we're going to stop working at. Or if you've finished everything, we're going to stop working at this time. And I think the other thing is check-ins. Now, when you have that first employee, it's kind of feels weird having a weekly team meeting because it's just you and them. But I would highly recommend putting something in place. So I'll share with you some stuff that we have in place that I think is helpful. And I'm sure there's a lot more that we could add to it. So for one, scheduling a distraction-free one-on-one in-person meeting once a week, same time every week, same day every week. So for instance, let's say you were to do every Monday at 7 a.m. So Monday at 7 a.m., you meet them in a parking lot. It's the same parking lot every week. Maybe it changes based off of the jobs that week. You do a truck inspection, check it for cleanliness. If it's not clean to your standards, you go ahead and throw on a cleaning period on his schedule, her schedule. Make sure that everything is in place, nothing is missing. And then you go over a short training thing, whatever it is. You know, maybe it's time of year, raccoons are having little ones. So you talk about the process in removing raccoons or whatever's going on that time of year and how to watch out for kits. Make sure that we're getting all of them out of the attic and not leaving any behind. Talk about eviction fluid and all the stuff in regards to removing nuisance raccoons from a structure. And then after that, it's kind of like, okay, what do you need? Do you have everything that you need? Did you see anything in the field that you need help with? You know, how's everything going? And you create that consistency, and I think that's what really creates structure in a company. And I think you don't want to have too much structure, but you want to have some. That way the employee has some expectations and they know that this thing is going to occur every week, and that's that. So I think that's really important when you hire your first person. So having the duties and responsibilities laid out, if they change, have them sign again or send them a copy so that they're aware, so there's no confusion. Another thing that I picked up over the last several years is whenever we have a team meeting or we have any type of meeting over an important topic, after we talk about that topic and we end the discussion, I always follow up with an email so it's documented. Going back to accountability so that they know this is something that occurred today. We had a meeting about this and, you know, now they have a copy about it. And they can't deny that they forgot or anything like that. I mean, they still can, but they have a copy in their email. And it does happen. Just because you send an email out as well, people still don't remember. So, you know, that's important to note. But it allows you to, in a professional way, enforce the rules. Like, hey, this is what we talked about. This is what was expected. This was the change that we made. You know, you're not doing that. So let's get this straightened. So I think those are really important things. And then not to get too fine into the details, but there are so many different things that we do in regards to the services that we provide and the tactics involved in trapping. I mean, I think trapping is an art form. It's not really something that you can teach the basics, but I think the best trappers out there, they're artists. You know, they understand animal behavior and they understand why the animal is going to walk over here rather than over there, and the angle in direction that the trap is facing, and you know, all of the things that do matter in trapping. And I love trapping. We don't talk about it on here intentionally, but my point is it's really, really hard to create SOPs that include all of the details in how to trap specific species. I mean, that is a very long book. So there's a couple of things that we do there that I literally knocked out in like 2 hours one day. So one thing that you can do is just create some general SOPs per species. Very, very short. And the fastest way to do that, and I think the best way for your people to learn, is create videos. So one day I went out to my hunt club and I recorded videos, and it took me an hour, maybe 2 hours. And I just recorded myself explaining how we approach certain species. So this is what we do for squirrels. This is what we do for armadillos. This is what we do for fill in the blank. And it's time consuming, right? But it's short and sweet, and it gets right to the point of this is the approach you need to take. And it's much faster than me sitting behind a computer typing all this stuff out, because I don't like sitting behind a computer. So you record yourself in doing videos of these things, and I just threw it up on a YouTube channel, and it's not public, but I can share that link with my staff, and they now have a copy of that link. And anytime they have a question, what they're supposed to do is go to the videos, pull up the species that they have a question about, and watch a short 2-minute video before they go talk to that customer. So they understand exactly what the approach should be if they want to know. So that's an easy way to get that information out there. So the point here is, when you hire somebody, is to have as much information available to that person as possible. Have as many standard operating procedures to that person as possible, even if it's your first hire. And you should also make sure your staff knows this is what it is right now, and it will change over time as we learn more ways to do these things. So I think that's really important too. When you're a small business and you're growing, there will be a lot of change. I think that's an important interview question. Are you okay with a rapidly changing environment? Because today you're employee number one. Next year, you might be employee number six. And the year after that, you know, you might be employee number 16. So it just depends on what you're trying to accomplish. But making sure that this person is on the same page, and I think, you know, it's really tough when it's just one person, if it's just you and another person. But, you know, you can get over that hump. And I think as you get to 5-6 employees, you now have a business that's possibly flowing a little bit better. And you don't have to be involved in every single decision. So I think those are some of the basic things to think about before you hire. So get these things done before that first day of hiring. And I think the process of hiring should be the same. The process for training should be the same for everybody. And of course, you can change that over time. And as you delegate that, people will kind of throw their own little 2 cents into that, and that's fine. But all in all, we try to have the same process for every employee. So paperwork one day, orientation, we show them a PowerPoint presentation, where our business came from, where it's going. We go through all of the training on the software that we use and our price sheet and all of our services. This is all in a classroom. We rent a little conference room for the day usually, or we'll do it at a Panera or something like that. We go through all that stuff, and then we take them out into the field. We show them some jobs that we've done in the past, you know, do a short ride along with that person for a day. And then after that, we train them in different services. So trapping, exclusion, pest control, sales, all of the things. And after they're trained, depending on the person, they train for a period of time. After that, then they're cut loose. And our strategy is we train and then we trust, and we only bring them back into training if they seem like they need it. But that does occur. So just because you've trained somebody doesn't, and you think that they're ready, doesn't mean that they are. And you might have to bring that person back into training if they are not performing at the level that you'd like them to. But if you have those set protocols in place, it's far easier to hire because you are following a process that you set. Because if you don't have those things, you're going to get distracted by customers calling in and people need things. And before you know it, it's off to the races and they haven't learned the basics of what they need to learn because you're in a rush. So you got to block some time off to train. And, you know, I think that does make a huge difference of having all that stuff in place. And we've done it both ways. You know, there was a time where we hired people and we didn't have any SOPs. We didn't have any duties and responsibilities on a piece of paper. It was just a handshake, fill out your payroll paperwork, and that was it. Then we're in a truck and we're riding around. I think when you hire your first employee, you at that point should already have access to your financials easily. You should have some type of service where you can look at your financials, because as you hire that employee, your finances are going to change. Obviously, you have payroll. When you hire a person, a lot of people don't know this, there's payroll tax on top of the payroll that you're paying that person, that the company has to pay. And, you know, that employee, there's going to be added expenses, whether it's insurance or workers' comp, commercial auto insurance, the supplies that you buy every day, that cost will probably go up, so on and so forth. And that first position that you fill, whatever that is, I'm not going to tell you what I think the best one is, but that first position, I think, it probably should be whatever is the most time consuming, and then whatever is preventing the company from increasing its revenue. So, for instance, if you are a salesperson, you, the owner, you feel like you're like the best salesperson ever, then I think that you should be spending as much time as possible doing sales. And maybe that means that you're answering the phone and doing sales. And that other person maybe is a technician. And then I think after you hire that technician and you grind it out and you increase the sales because you're doing less service, then you add another technician. And you replicate again. And I think at that point, this is what we've seen. We've seen this numerous times. Typically, if we can hire a tech, we want to hire a tech that has sales capabilities at that point. So you, the owner, you have two techs, one or two of those techs, it'd be great if it was both, also have sales capabilities. So if they have any white space on their schedule, you can throw a lead or two on their schedule every day. Now you got other people out there closing deals other than you. And that really feels good when you have other people that can sell in your business. I think for me, like one of the best feelings that I ever had was when my employees started outselling what I was selling. And that's amazing because it gives you unbelievable freedom. Okay, now I can focus on catching up on administrative work, you know, the back office stuff, figuring out what our next steps are. And I have less distractions because I'm not chasing leads. But you hire your first couple of techs, maybe you get one that's selling, and then we do what's called a step-up plan. If a technician is really good at sales, we sit down with this technician and say, hey, look, are you interested in doing sales full-time? And if they say yes, then we create a step-by-step plan going back to accountability. This is what you have to do in order to move into a sales role. You have to sell this much for this long. If you do that and you train your replacement, we'll move you into sales full time. So that's what we do. And then from there, you know, we'll go ahead and start looking for their replacement. We'll go ahead and do the interviews, get that person ready to go. Assuming that tech hits his goals, we get another technician trained, and now we move that one tech into sales full-time and replace his role with the new tech. And now we got a full-time sales rep and two techs, and that's great. And he should be able to keep those two techs plenty busy by himself. And then from there, it's duplicate. Okay, what's the opportunity going forward? What do we need to do? Where's our revenue? This is where your finances, I think, really come to play. And for me, and I know that there's a lot of other smart people way smarter than me that will probably say otherwise, but in my experience of doing this many times is at that point, I'm looking at our financials. I'm looking at our net income on our financial statement, which is a fancy word for profit. This is the money that we are making, that we are actually putting in our pocket. And if I can identify in that net income that it's high enough to where I don't have to take a step back, too bad of a step back in my spending, my personal spending, and my personal income, and I can afford to hire a manager at that point, that's exactly what I would do. So that I can now really focus on driving momentum in the business and helping out where I need to. But at that point, salesperson, couple techs, and then a manager. And that manager is going to be a hybrid. They're going to fill in wherever they need to fill in. They're going to help out. They're going to have the highest salary amongst the team. They're going to be the most experienced among the team as well. And maybe they already work for you. Maybe you promote somebody to a manager. I think the manager in a market needs to have sales capabilities. They need to be able to help out with service, of course. Maybe not with everything, but with most. If they can do everything, great. But sometimes that's harder to find. And it just needs to be somebody that you can really trust to run the show for you. And at that point, you know, it's the same thing. For each role, I have new SOPs, I have different training, and I've got those things set up, and I've thought those things through before I hired that person. And, you know, to do that right, it's very time consuming. It takes a lot of time to think through, okay, what are all the things that this person needs to be doing, and you got to block off time to do that. And it's hard to do that when you're out there running and gunning, chasing leads and solving problems. So I think, you know, for me, some of my best work is done on Saturday and Sunday morning. Everybody's still asleep and the phone's not ringing. Employees aren't calling. I have no distractions and I can sit down on my laptop and knock out some of these things so that we know, okay, this is what our strategy is for training this position. And these are the things that need to be included in their duties and responsibilities. And it's very clean and organized. And now when we hire this person, they understand what they need to be doing. And there's no confusion. Because if you're rushing through this, it's going to be obvious after you hire. You don't want to rush through this, as difficult as that may sound. I think once you get there, I mean, I went pretty fast. Your first hire to moving somebody into a sales role. And so a lot of you guys run hybrid technicians that sell and service. We do have those as well, but it's never a thing in perpetuity. It's a transitional role where they move into a full-time salesperson eventually. And we're not opposed to throwing leads at technicians if nobody else can get to them. That's great. If they have the capability, I think that's great. But we like to have people that are fully dedicated to sales. I'm sure I have a podcast about that somewhere. But they have less distractions. That's the whole idea. They're not focused on, they're not hitting a crossroads every day of, do I service a customer or do I chase new money? So that's why we separate those. And, but yeah, once you get to that point where you can afford to hire a manager and your cash looks good, and that's the point of having good financials when you hire your first employee, so that you can see, okay, what is going on now that I've hired this person? What is changing? And compare, what was my trailing 12? What was the last 12 months? financials looking like compared to, you know, this past month? You know, what's different? What costs went up? What costs went down? Are we growing our cash flow? Because that's a whole other thing and a whole other discussion. But if you're growing your revenue and you're not growing your profit, well, you have a problem. And maybe there is a light at the end of the tunnel, but this is where somebody really smart that understands your business and your finances will be able to help you if you have a good mentor. But you get a manager in place at that point, and now you can really add some serious rocket fuel to your business. This is when you go from being an owner-operator to an owner. Some may call themselves CEO at that point. And now you can really start thinking about, okay, what do we want to do here? Do I really want to grow this thing? Do I want to keep it where it's at? And you can kind of decide and figure out what your next step is. And, you know, when you get to that point, you're at a size where you can do a lot. And you can go out and open multiple locations, or you can just focus on growing the one that you have, which is, I think, the easier way to go. But if you want to grow fast and you know, you're okay with traveling, you could definitely open up a handful of locations quickly. And there's other strategies to do that. So just wanted to get on here today and talk about that and talk about hiring and how to go from one person to multiple people. And, you know, I think it's maybe what I said sounds a lot easier than it really is. It is a lot of work. As if you're the one doing the training, it is a lot of work. Because you're going to constantly have distractions while you're training. And it's going to be long days. And you still have your other job to do after you finish doing all the training, right? All the stuff involved in being an owner of a company. So I hope it helped you. If you have any questions, feel free to shoot us an email, growth@conservemail.com. If you have any topics you want me to cover, happy to do that. I don't have any guests in my lineup right now, and because I'm doing this podcast at 5:30, 6 in the morning, so I do intend to at some point, but right now we are busy growing away, and I'm trying to dedicate my days to working on the business. So appreciate everybody for listening. Thanks. Thank you for listening to today's episode. It was brought to you by Conserve. Do you run a wildlife removal business and feel like you have no freedom? You're taking the phone calls, you're doing the services, and you just don't have enough free time for yourself. Are you ready to double or triple the size of your company and build a business that can run and grow without you while steadily increasing your profits? Well, Conserve partners with businesses just like yours all over the country, and together we are building a fast-growing business around your goals and lifestyle. We can reduce your operating cost, we can increase your sales, and give you, the owner, more freedom and help you build a business that runs and grows without you. To set up an initial consultation, email us at growth@conservemail.com. That's growth@conservemail.com.